your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. All comments, views, and opinions expressed are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. In the next hour, Dr. Rosenthal and her guests cover both the common and the not-so-common health issues you want and need to know. Get your pencils ready. Here's your host, Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.
Hello, welcome to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, the program that reminds anyone coping with health problems, we are not alone. The goal of this program is to discuss both common and not so common health issues with the experts who really know what they're talking about. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. I have a long career as a medical journalist and I'm the author of over 30 consumer health books. I have a PhD in medical ethics and medical sociology and direct the program for bioethics and patients' rights at the University of Kentucky. Today we are devoting our show to the subject of early menopause, also called premature ovarian failure. Our guests today are Dr. Elena Christofides, an endocrinologist in private practice in Columbus, Ohio, who is also vice president of the Ohio Valley chapter of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists. Later in the show, we'll be joined by author Karen Baynard, who wrote the book Menopause Before 40. Karen will share her experience of early menopause with us. So first, I'd like to start with Dr. Christofides. Hello.
Hello, Sarah.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
maybe you can define what early menopause actually means and the difference between normal and early menopause, and maybe give us an idea of how many women can expect to have early menopause.
Well, there's several different age cutoffs that people use when they define early menopause, and I think it really matters more just the point that it's not at a normal time frame. And normal menopause really occurs in the time frame between 50 and 60, and it's typically governed by when your mother and your grandmother and your aunts experienced menopause. And in terms of what specific year that may occur, but premature menopause or premature ovarian failure basically is defining a time frame when a woman experiences the menopause, which is actually not a day or a particular point in time. It's actually a graded effect. It happens over many years, actually. And this simply defines menopause occurring prior to the age of 35, and for some people, the definition is actually prior to the age of 45.
Okay. So essentially what happens, because it's so gradual, what are some of the symptoms?
Well, the gradualness is really more defined by what I think most people think of as typical menopause symptoms, which are hot flashes, mood swings, irregular periods, difficulty with weight, difficulty with thinking. People often describe their thinking as clouded or foggy. They feel like they're in a pit and they're kind of constantly moving through muck in terms of how they're thinking. And those are common complaints. Obviously, not everybody experiences these complaints. Not everybody experiences them in the same order or to the same severity. And they can occur for days, weeks, months, or years, both leading up to as well as following the cessation of periods.
So if you're going through early menopause, then this can start happening in your late 20s?
Yes. There are some women who it starts occurring in their late 20s and early 30s, and for most of them, they complete menopause, meaning their cycles stop at the age of anywhere from 35 to 45.
So what I'm thinking is, and I think that when we have Karen on later in the show, she'll probably talk about this, but it's sort of like if you go to your doctor with those symptoms, are they going to immediately start thinking that you're in menopause when you're only, 29?
Well, not necessarily. Certainly not from a primary care perspective and your typical family doctor. They're probably not aware as much as the OBGYNs or your gynecologist that this can occur. And, certainly these symptoms are not classic, except for really the hot flashes. Some people do think that the hot flashes are rather typical. And if you describe a typical hot flash, then your doctor typically will, check for signs of menopause or blood work that might help delineate that. Unfortunately, most women,
in that age group have never experienced a hot flash before, nor have their contemporaries, and so they don't really know what a hot flash is, and they don't usually have coworkers or friends in that age group to help describe that for them. And in addition, their cycles may be not quite as irregular enough to alert someone to that possibility. And often, the blood work isn't necessarily abnormal for some time. It can be rather normal for quite some time.
So what is the likelihood that a lot of these, that women experiencing this in their late 20s, early 30s are going to be sent to a psychiatrist? Or is that for more mental health workups?
Well, usually they just get placed on an antidepressant before they ever get sent to a psychiatrist, because most people usually balk at the idea that they're the label that the psychiatrist gives them. And they also balk, of course, at being placed on an antidepressant, which you should. I mean, being depressed does not mean that you have hot flashes and your cycles are irregular and you're losing your memory sort of thing. But, most patients will get placed on a typical antidepressant, or especially be told that they're just PMS or that their PMS is worsening. And unfortunately, I think that PMS has actually ruined the label for us, because many women who truly suffer from PMS have absolutely nothing to do with premature menopause and vice versa. And unfortunately, I think in the age group of women who may be experiencing premature ovarian failure, are going to not necessarily think of menopause first, they're going to think of PMS first, because that's become so prevalent a discussion. And so by bringing up the fact that they believe their PMS is worsening with their doctor may actually be artificially placing a label on them that leads their doctor down one line of thinking or evaluation that may miss the underlying point.
Now, I know that there is some debate, which I personally think is doesn't hold water. Some debate that there's actually a clear distinction between what we call premature ovarian failure and premature menopause. And I'm wondering if you can sort of speak to that debate. And I don't know if you're cool in that.
Yeah, I don't know why there's a debate. Frankly, I really don't understand where this issue ever came about. If you actually look up the definition of menopause, it is symptoms consistent with a climacteric state, which basically means the state of being no longer fertile,
okay,
and meaning no longer ovarian functioning.
Okay.
Well, if your ovaries are no longer functioning, whether you want to label it menopause or whether you want to label it ovarian failure, it is medically the exact same thing.
Okay.
And
thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah.
There's actually organizations out there. I mean, I think that there's actually one organization that insists that premature ovarian failure is different.
Well, it's different because it's premature. premature is premature, but yeah, no.
But so is early menopause. It's premature menopause.
Exactly. I don't know. I know you and I have discussed this before,
yeah.
And I think that their political fight is not a reasonable fight, and I do believe it's political rather than medically motivated, because there's no one in the endocrine field that would buy their argument that it's somehow different.
Okay.
And I believe perhaps the political motivation may well be centered around the confusion and controversy over hormone replacement therapy. And that.
Oh, why would that make a difference?
Well, because hormone replacement therapy for menopause symptoms is currently undergoing a transition due to some recent, well, it's not that recent, but the latest study being quite negative and actually generating a significant amount of controversy in terms of should we treat menopause symptoms or not. Is it actually worthwhile in terms of overall health benefits or not?
Oh, so if they call it premature ovarian failure, it somehow makes taking hormone therapy to correct it, there's a different connotation than taking hormone therapy for menopause.
It somehow makes it more legitimate, probably.
Oh, isn't that interesting? I never thought of that.
Yeah, I think that's probably why they're politicizing the argument in that way. And certainly for any endocrinologist, seeking to treat a patient and a patient seeking care for these reasons, one needs to think of the situation as in terms of the patient's age rather than what defines them in terms of on the chart when you
turn it into the insurance company. The code for premature ovarian failure and the code for menopause are not the same, but the code for premature menopause and the code for premature ovarian failure are the same, and you cannot think of them in the same way in terms of a woman who's 35 no longer having cycles versus a 60-year-old no longer having cycles.
Right.
They need to be treated differently. It is not the same disorder,
right,
and does not confer the same risk in terms of the woman's long-term health. And so there is justification for separating the terms for political reasons, but not for medical reasons.
Right, right. Well, one of the can we talk a little bit about the sort of, I guess, the statistics, how many women are going to be, has the number changed? Is it increasing? Is it the same as it's always been?
No, it's about the same. It's less than 5% of the female population, and the reason it's very small is because it actually is an autoimmune disorder related to other endocrine autoimmune disorders.
In all cases?
Virtually all of them,
really?
Yes. Yeah, virtually all of them. Now, that doesn't mean that you can only see it in situations such as type 1 diabetes or Hashimoto's hypothyroidism or Addison's disease, which are each individually an autoimmune destruction of an endocrine system. The premature menopause, premature ovarian failure, whichever you want to call it, is part and parcel of that same disease state. And when you see any one of those independently, that does raise your suspicion for the others occurring as well. And so it is a bit of an autoimmune problem. We don't really know the etiology of it, but that is what separates it from regular menopause, in that it tends to be familial, it tends to be autoimmune, and it tends to occur in patients simultaneously with these other three endocrine autoimmunities.
I see. So if you're obviously a good indication is family history. We're going to have to take a break now. My guest is Ohio-based Dr. Elena Christofides, who is an endocrinologist talking with me today about early menopause, also known as premature ovarian failure. And yes, they are the same. For more information, we suggest starting with the book Menopause Before 40, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about accurately diagnosing premature menopause and a little bit more about some of the treatments to correct it. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Stay mentally, physically, and emotionally fit with Younger Every Day, hosted by Dr. Bob Payson, broadcast every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Younger Every Day will offer you alternative solutions for a variety of health issues, all backed by clinical, scientific, and medical data. Dr. Payson and other expert guests will inform and inspire people of all ages to look and feel better. Younger Every Day. Think clear, feel strong, grow younger with Dr. Bob Payson, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of manekinism. Manekinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found a small patch of plastic on my right shoulder.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of premature menopause with Ohio-based hormone specialist Dr. Elena Christofides. So where we left off, we were talking about kind of the statistics and it's you're saying it's sort of remaining at around 5% of the female population. But what I guess the question that I had is, does it feel because we have more women that are going through therapies and surgeries that are making that where they're going into surgical menopause at early ages, where do they fall into the early menopause picture?
Yeah, that's a group that we neglected to mention on the previous segment, but surgical menopause or premature surgical menopause is unfortunately not going away, and that represents a different population than that 5% because this is sort of an elective thing. And I used to think that it was something of the bygone era where women who were having surgical menopauses in the 1960s and 1970s, that I'm now seeing that they're older. But I'm actually, unfortunately, starting to see a rise again in young women in their 20s and in their early 30s, again, going through this surgical menopause. And they, unfortunately, suffer much more than the other patients do because they go from completely normal to completely abnormal in a matter of days. So they feel very acutely the loss of the hormones, and it really, really throws them for a loop to such a degree because the doctors rarely prepare them for the psychological changes and the hormonal changes that occur, and they rarely put them on appropriate hormone replacement therapy afterwards. So therefore, the patient is left with being, you know, full-blown menopause, not adequate hormone therapy, and then basically being labeled as, you know, a nut job, being put on antidepressants and sent to the psychiatrist because they're not given proper coping skills or coping mechanisms to learn how to deal with this situation and be prepared for what's going to happen, because I think everyone just sort of assumes that it's very easy to do, and unfortunately, I hate to label it this way, but it tends to be the male physicians that do this and don't tell their patients what's coming, and so then the patient is left distrusting the medical profession, quite reasonably so, because they're left in this state of complete disrepair and despair, quite literally. I mean, I've had women breaking down, crying in my office, in total despair over how bad they feel, and they literally want their life back, and that's all they can think of, and they can't.
So I guess what I'm hearing is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you're in your early 30s, or, you know, and you're having a procedure that renders you in surgical menopause, it's much more traumatic than for the, you know, a woman in her late 50s who's having the same procedure. Would that be correct?
Because yeah, that would be that would be correct to say, because, you know, the body does go through a natural decline. You reach your peak of fertility as well as ovarian function in your late teens and early 20s. Starting about the age of somewhere between 25 and 30, you start the natural decline. So by the time you're 50 or 55, if you're still having periods, but you are rendered surgically menopausal, the difference pre and post procedure is much less hormonally because your body has already started the decline and is very much towards the end. Whereas if you have the procedure in your 20s or even in your 30s, your decline has not really come far enough along to prepare you for the sudden loss of it. It's just at the beginning stage.
So women who are in early menopause, whether surgical or otherwise, can they be stimulated and corrected enough with hormone therapy to actually conceive a child?
No, unfortunately, that's not an option. Surgical menopause obviously is a complete removal of everything, and what's there is no longer there. the premature menopause people who are autoimmune in origin, or who are the sort of an early decline of their.
Can I just backtrack for 1 second? So let's say I guess what I meant in terms of surgical menopause. So some women would have if they had chemotherapy and their ovaries failed, but they still had their uterus.
Oh, they can't bring their ovaries back.
So having a child in any way is not possible for them, and having a child for the other is also not possible.
Right. Now, if you were having chemotherapy, you could bank your eggs, and then you could use your uterus later. You could be induced to have fertility through uterine stimulation, but then your eggs would have had to have been harvested prior to chemotherapy.
Okay. Or otherwise, you can still do egg donation.
Yes,
or something.
Yes.
Okay.
Or you could do egg donor. Right.
Okay. But obviously, if you don't have if you've had a hysterectomy, it's not a
right
possibility.
Right. But premature menopause, and the other way, autoimmunity wise, there's no way you can stimulate it to come back. It's not coming back. It's scarred down. It's died. It's failed. Whatever term you want to give it, the ovaries have failed.
Even if you have egg donation, it doesn't work?
That's a tricky area. There are some clinics that have had success with stimulating the uterus and supporting a pregnancy up to a point, because the placenta eventually takes over production of the majority of the hormones for the pregnancy. But it's very tricky to do and usually unsuccessful unless the woman is very young or very early in the process.
What would the hormone therapy regimen be that you would recommend? And I know we're going to pick this up later in the show too, but maybe you could sort of outline that a little bit before we go to the next break.
It's basically, if you're going to do uterine stimulation for preparation of accepting an egg or an embryo, they would give you a regimen consisting typically of human menopausal gonadotropins is what they call them, or HMG, which are basically high-dose LH and FSH in addition to progesterones, very high-potency progesterones, one to stimulate the uterine lining forming and one to keep the uterine lining plump and juicy. And those are continued until the embryo implants and the placenta is developed, and roughly up until late first trimester, at which point the placenta typically takes over for the pregnancy and is able to make its own hormones that are necessary. But the success of the HMG and progesterones are dependent on how early in the ovarian failure process the woman is, because the farther, obviously LH and FSH are elevated in menopause at just the same as premature menopause. And obviously you lose the ability at some point of the uterus to respond to the stimulation after a period of absence. So the longer the stimulation is absent or not responding, the less likely more hormones are going to work, because the body's already under maximum stimulation.
Okay.
So giving HMG, estrogens, and progesterones when the uterus is still capable of responding typically will work and can be done, although, like I said, very tricky. But after a period of absence of periods, roughly 6 months to a year, it's very unlikely to work and not usually recommended.
Okay. And just for women who just want to, have their life back and just have the situation corrected somewhat, would it just be a regular, is there any special type of hormone therapy regimen?
Yeah, there is. I think a lot of people are put on birth control pills to continue them cycling to make them feel more normal psychologically.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's a real common one, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
But unfortunately, some people don't tolerate birth control pills, and if you're over 35, you really should consider not using birth control pills because of the risk of blood clots. If you smoke, definitely should not be using birth control pills because the risk of blood clots is even greater. And then if you smoke and you're over 35, I ethically cannot put you on birth control pills. So we tend to resort to typical what we call menopause therapy,
over 35, even if you're in good health otherwise, you don't do birth control pills?
If you're over 35, I will take the health into consideration. Most people will take overall health into consideration before you put them on birth control pills. But if you smoke and you're over 35, absolutely not.
Okay.
That's unconscionable.
I thought the rules had changed somewhat. I thought that you could be on birth control pills, and if you're in good health otherwise, beyond 35?
Oh, yeah, you can. You can take that into consideration, but the problem is that what's defining good health? I mean, basically, you have to not be obese, and you have to not smoke, and you have to roughly try to take care of yourself with diet and exercise. So it's really up to the physician and the patient. I mean, you can safely prescribe birth control pills up to the age of 40, assuming that you have a compliant and appropriate patient. If you have a patient, though, who's 5 foot tall and weighs 300 pounds and is 35, no, I would not necessarily place that patient on birth control pills because the risk of blood clots are much greater.
I see. Because I have heard that the argument that, you know, with certain pills and, you know, sort of women delaying, you know, childbearing or just wanting to sort of have birth control right through their sexually active years, that that it can sort of be, you know, birth control pills until you're reasonably assured that you're in menopause and then go on hormone replacement therapy.
I don't think I think that's probably bucking the trends more than anything. That's really not necessarily a good idea. Because birth control pills actually have levels of hormones that are roughly 5 to 10 times, depending on which one it is, 5 to 10 times the normal level of hormones that a woman would make.
I see.
So there is some concern that the longer you're on birth control pills, the greater your exposure to excess estrogens and your greater exposure in terms of risk of breast cancer.
I see. Okay.
So
it's mainly a fear of breast cancer and sort of other estrogenic conditions.
Yes, yeah, breast cancer and blood clots, really, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so like I said, it's a very individual decision. If a woman is in her 30s and still desires contraception, we try to ease them over to a more non-hormonal form of contraception. If you're doing it for menopause or premature menopause, some people like to do the birth control pills because it's a little bit more accepted socially that someone might be on those. But for the most part, I usually prefer to get someone on traditional HRT such as patches or creams or pills in addition to progesterones in a different version of it so that we're getting them on some sort of stable therapy lifelong that's appropriate, that you can maintain for a lifelong at a more normal level of estrogen and progesterone versus the super therapeutic doses you see with birth control pills. Because remember, birth control pills, the agenda for them is you're giving the body so much more estrogen than it really needs. You shut down complete production of LH and FSH, so there's no follicles and eggs that are stimulated. So if you're using such high doses to prevent stimulation of egg production, that's not necessary in situations where you can't make eggs.
I see.
So the need for that level of hormone is just not there.
I see. I see. So it's a different story. So essentially then, the general rule is depending upon the age, you'd start with birth control and then you'd ease out and go into sort of regular hormone therapy with patches and that sort of thing until and then you continue that until a normal menopausal age.
Well, no, that's the big controversy at the moment. The guidelines are continually being rewritten, and the American College of Endocrinology feels that women should continue hormone replacement therapy so long as they and their doctor feel that it is helpful and they are not experiencing any problems. And whether that time frame is 5 or 10 or 20 years after a natural menopause age is completely up to the patient and the physician, whereas the American College of Gynecology states that they should be limited to the shortest amount of time possible simply and only to treat symptoms and should be limited to less than 5 years after a natural menopause. Obviously, the American College of Endocrinology differs greatly from ACOG, and since we are the hormone specialists, I tend to follow what we say versus the gynecologists. And for that reason, my premature menopause patients, I tend to continue them to the same age as I normally would any menopausal woman, so roughly into the 60s, early 70s.
I see. Okay. So basically then you just, so birth control until it makes sense to get off,
right.
Get them off, and then it's continued.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break now. My guest is Ohio-based Dr. Elena Christofides, who is an endocrinologist talking with me today about early menopause, also known as premature ovarian failure. For more information, we suggest starting with the book Menopause Before 40, available on Amazon. When we come back, we're going to be joined by author Karen Baynard, who wrote the book Menopause Before 40. She's going to share her personal story with us. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site, as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your life, your health, your network. This is Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Women, do you feel that you're too old to be active, too old to be beautiful, too old to have fun, or too old to be fabulous? Well, if that's what you think, then there's good news for you. You're wrong. Tune in to Voice America every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Aging Outside the Box, Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell. Aging Outside the Box is a fabulous, fun program that gives you every reason to feel greater than you ever have. Host Shirley Mitchell and O.E. Cruiser Small will cover phenomenal topics such as women's issues, health, diet, exercise, nutrition, faith, travel, and many other concerns for women of all ages. Feel young, feel smart, and feel fabulous by tuning in to Aging Outside the Box. Fabulous Women Over 50 with Shirley Mitchell every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of premature menopause with Ohio-based hormone specialist Dr. Elena Christofides, and now joining us, Karen Baynard, author of Menopause Before 40. So, Karen, welcome. What I would like to start with is I think that a lot of what we were talking about at the beginning of the show is kind of your story in a way. Maybe you can just tell us a little bit about your experience. I will tell our listeners that am I correct in saying you were going through this in the 80s?
1994.
Okay. So, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that there should have been so much confusion. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the whole diagnostic nightmare that you've gone through and that sort of thing.
Yeah, 1994 was when I first started to clue in that something was wrong. There wasn't any discussion about menopause before 40. I was just 35. My family doctor wouldn't refer me to a clinic that I knew about, an endocrinology clinic, because they thought I was too young. And I've been kind of the last few years we started talking about perimenopause, and, you know, women can go through various things before or symptoms before actually hitting menopause, and that's been really nice to hear because at the time when I started there was no mention of that at all. So it took probably about 2-3 years. And that took a lot of beating down a lot of doors before I finally got some answers and help.
What were some of the wrong doors you banged on?
Well, the family physician who wouldn't refer me, and I needed a referral from a family doctor to get into the clinic.
I should tell our listeners, Karen is calling us from Ottawa, Is that correct?
Yes.
So Ottawa, Canada, which has a different healthcare system, which is the referral system, which is also a similar system if anyone is in a managed care plan here in the U.S.
But, yeah, it's not that different most other places in the U.S. either, Sarah.
But, okay, so first you needed, so your first battle was getting referral.
It was a referral, and my family doctor wouldn't even listen to the possibility that, you know, I knew something was wrong with my hormones. So I called the clinic and I explained that I couldn't get a referral and could they please put me on the waiting list. So they did. Then I called a while, I don't know, it was almost a year later. I was still waiting. I knew it was a long waiting list. But I thought this was getting a bit long. It was about 9 months at that point. And I explained to her, you know, where was I on the waiting list? That's what I wanted to find out. And I was still not being bumped up. And she said, you know, we're still waiting for your referral. So I explained to her again that I couldn't get one. And then she was nice enough to just push me through. So I managed to get in with a referral, but otherwise it would have been impossible.
What were some of the, you deal in the book a lot with the psychosocial aspects of going through this. Maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
Well, the more physical parts were my periods were getting all strange. I was having flooding, you know, periods I might miss once in a while. I might get two periods in a month. So I was really, and, you know, the flooding and the very erratic bleeding patterns. You know, after so many years of having, you know, my period, I knew my cycles pretty well. I knew exactly when I ovulated. I had pretty straightforward, you know, I could chart it all. And then when all that started to change, that's when I thought, well, something's wrong. At the same time, I was going through some mood problems and just some periods of depression, and all that was wrapped into the whole thing. And then I was, once I got into the clinic, I was diagnosed as being hypothyroid as well. So a whole bunch of things.
Was the hypothyroid diagnosis accurate, or were they just guessing that that's what was happening?
No, it was actually happening. It was accurate, but it was just on the border. You know, it was just starting to slip into an abnormal range. So, yeah, it was just starting to become an issue.
And I know that you were also, you talk a lot in the book about the whole sort of the effect that this is having, you know, in your personal relationships with your, you know, with your husband and your kids and that sort of, maybe you can speak to that issue
a
bit.
Yeah, when it all started, my youngest child was a year old, and she has four older siblings. So, you know, my family was pretty well set. It was a large family. I was working full-time as a teacher, and it was very difficult to keep working and keep on top of all the mood problems. And you know, I would often just manage to get through the workday and then basically fall apart at home. I spent a lot of time struggling, trying to keep things together. It was a big, you know, keeping the work up and the family, and it was a lot going on.
When you say sort of mood problems and those kinds of things, how can you give us kind of a little bit of a more insider view on what sorts of moods and what were you feeling and thinking and those kind of, like what was actually going on in your head during this period?
Feeling, first I was also anemic at the same time, so I was very tired a lot and I was losing a lot of motivation. It just seemed like there was way too much going on and I often just wanted everything to stop.
Just sort of felt very overwhelmed.
Very overwhelmed. I wanted the train just to stop. I wanted to get off, take a breather for a while. That was sort of, you know, building up, and then one day it just kind of peaked, and I disassociated that one day, and that just threw everything completely. I sort of lost the person I was before and after. We're completely different, and I never did quite regain that person I was before, but it completely threw me.
So that's the kind of thing, Dr. Christofides, you were talking about.
Yes.
I want to be back, and trying to find the self again.
Yeah, and unfortunately, most people spend so much time in the non-self frame that when they finally are getting care, getting therapy, and getting help, they've lost too much and they can't go back. And that's not uncommon.
Yes, I think my self-confidence, it was completely shattered. And for many years, you know, being under the influence of various antidepressants, you know, and the odd tranquilizer, you know, I often wondered, well, what's my real self? Maybe it's buried under all of this. You know, so it's hard to understand that.
See, I guess what I'm thinking as you're telling the story is, you know, in addition to all of the cycle changes that one is going through, there are also a lot of side effects like, you know, a lot of antidepressants, especially in that, I think some of them have improved, but a lot of women complain, for example, of a decreased libido.
Yeah.
So you have a decreased libido on top of going through this. It's hard to know what is, you know, what is the cause of that.
Yeah, so, yeah, definitely they had side effects. And I wouldn't stay on many very long if they had, you know, some I was practically comatose on. So I didn't tolerate them very well. It took, and then if it affected my libido too much, then I would, you know, I would tell my psychiatrist and we would try another one.
What, you know, with going through all of this, Karen, what advice do you have, to other women regarding, you know, sort of when they start to experience this, I mean, did you find the right doctor eventually?
Yes. Yeah, eventually. It took quite a bit of doing. Even the clinic that I started out with, it helped me through a lot of problems, you know, and really got me on the road to recovery. Even that eventually sort of ran its course, and I had to go somewhere else to get the help that I knew I needed. But for me anyway, it was just being persistent, and for some reason I knew there was something and this wasn't the way I was supposed to be feeling and that I could feel better. So I just kept trying and trying, and I think that would be my advice because, I mean, I knew when something was wrong, and I think most women do, and if I tried to explain to the doctors often, that wasn't necessarily recognized.
So you started to notice things were sort of falling apart at around 35, like something wasn't normal. So how many years did it take for you to sort of feel like you were in good care and that you were sort of correcting, you know, sort of this problem? Or do you never?
6 years.
6 years.
8 years.
8 years. So that's already. So far. That's a long time.
Very long time. Yes, we tried all sorts of things. Yeah, before we finally got. Yeah.
What was the final? So what? What is sort of the right recipe for you?
Well, I guess.
In terms of feeling more or less balanced, I mean, you say you're not quite right, but.
Well, I don't think I'll ever be exactly what I was, but I think that's what happens when you suffer long periods of depression. You know, it's just something has gone there. Do I feel, so I don't feel like I was, but I feel much more confident than I could have imagined when I was in the middle of all of it. I mean, one of the initial first steps was the ablation to control, you know, I had a very thick uterine lining. So the ablation really helped wonderfully. At least that stopped all the flooding and the, you know, the erratic bleeding patterns and losing the blood and the anemia and all that stuff. So that solved that, but that only lasted for about 5 years.
So you had anemia. I guess I should point this out to the listeners. Your anemia was connected to your flooding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it had been, and the lining was extremely thick, so I guess I'd been... for quite a while.
We're going to take a break now and come back to this conversation. My guests are Ohio-based Dr. Elena Christofides, who is an endocrinologist, and also Karen Baynard, author of the book Menopause Before 40, available on Amazon. When we come back, we'll talk more about Karen's story and treating premature menopause, not just with hormone therapy, but addressing some of the psychosocial issues and alternatives, etc. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. For further information, visit me online at sarahhealth.com. All shows are archived on our site as well as at Voice America Health and Wellness Network at voiceamerica.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Steps to a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your Health Press is a publishing company that specializes in unique books and hard-to-find health products, topics that mainstream publishers ignore due to rarity, stigma, or controversy. Looking for books on thyroid cancer, early menopause, ostomy, or other rare or embarrassing conditions? You'll find lots of unique topics at yourhealthpress.com. At yourhealthpress.com, all of our books are available exclusively online or via toll-free ordering, so you can purchase in privacy. No cash register syndrome or special ordering from your bookstore or library. Your Health Press titles are available at all online bookstores, including Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. To browse the Your Health Press catalog of titles, search the list of authors, or purchase, visit YourHealthPress.com. For toll-free ordering, call 1-888-232-4444. Your Health Press, prescribed reading for today's niche market.
Growing Up in America explores the challenges, risks, benefits, and differences this generation of children face each day. Hosted by veteran pediatric emergency physician and father of four, Dr. Charles Nzeka, this show is for parents, teens, and children. It crosses each generation. By exploring the unique aspects of matriculation within this current generation, we hope to find answers and ways of optimizing this experience for today's generation. Growing Up in America with Dr. Charles Nzeka broadcasts each Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Are you tired of being tired? Are you sick of sitting around while life passes you by? You can get back on track by tuning in to Voice America Health and Wellness every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time. For Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look. Attracting Abundance is the program that empowers you to finally break through your limiting beliefs and blocks and shows you how to succeed in all areas of your life, from improved financial abundance, health and weight problems, as well as your relationships. Don't wait another week to be joyful. Listen to Attracting Abundance, the Energy of Success with Carol Look this Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome back to Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal. If you have a question or comment, dial 866-472-5792. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Sarah.
Hello, we are back. I'm Dr. Sarah Rosenthal, your host. Welcome back to Sarah Health with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal and our discussion of premature menopause with Ohio-based hormone specialist Dr. Elena Christofides and Karen Baynard, author of Menopause Before 40. So before we went to the break, we left off with Karen telling us about her story and just how difficult it was to get to the right doctor and sort of find the right balance. Dr. Christofides, I'm wondering if you can comment on what you're hearing from Karen's story as a practitioner.
Yeah, I think unfortunately Karen's story is all too familiar and too common in women who have autoimmune diseases that sort of hit at the same time. Her diagnosis of the thyroid condition when her cycles were irregular was appropriate, because the first thing you should do when cycles are irregular is look for thyroid disorders. But unfortunately, I think it probably masked her diagnosis of premature menopause because of the fact that many of the things that you see in premature menopause, such as irregular periods, excessive bleeding, low progesterone, are often coexistent with thyroid disease. And then unfortunately, because the two conditions are autoimmune, they do take a significant amount of effort to control both at the same time before a patient feels good. And it takes a recognition of how one therapy affects the other therapy. And if you're not aware of how those affect it, it can take a very long time for the practitioner to have the patient up to speed with the hormone regimen that is good for them and makes them feel good. And I think that's exactly what happened to Karen. It just took her so long for those very reasons.
How common is it for us to see someone with Karen's sort of combination of thyroid and premature menopause?
Well, that's probably the most common combination, but certainly it's any of the autoimmune endocrine diseases occur with the premature menopause. So the type 1 diabetes, the Hashimoto's, the Addison's. But I have probably the majority of my patients in my practice are actually Hashimoto's with premature menopause or type 1 diabetes with premature menopause. Probably that's the vast majority, or the thyroid, so that coexist.
Now, Karen, I know you and I have had this discussion before, and you've got some information in your book. I think we make a statement about this, but in Chinese medicine, they have this linked organ system, and they have ovaries and thyroid are sort of linked organs. And I'm wondering, Dr. Christofides, what do you think about that?
Well,
I
think the practitioners of medicine that are non-Western, non-American traditional type practitioners certainly have keen powers of observation, and that doesn't surprise me one bit. Certainly ovarian dysfunction and thyroid dysfunction do occur so frequently together, because the thyroid, one of its main functions is controlling the cycle and controlling ovarian function. I mean, if your thyroid is off, you have a lot of infertility because of the progesterone issue, and so you have so many linked functions in that regard. It doesn't surprise me at all that they link them. I mean, Chinese medicine, they're not stupid. I think we're the ones who really are. We forget these linkages very too often.
So it's just there. So they're like observing that, yeah, these go together.
Yeah, I think anybody with simple powers of observation over long periods of time, viewing many women, which is really what pre 20th century medicine was. Those observation powers are quite real, and those are linked. I mean, those are linked, and we know that they're linked. So, I think that's a situation where they saw something that was true.
Karen, did you find difficulty with that recognition in like with your practitioners recognizing that they often go together?
Yes, definitely.
It drove you nuts, didn't it?
Yes. Because, and I can't find it. I've even talked to another endocrinologist I spoke with, asking him, because from what I had read and from just my understanding of the issues, and Lena mentions that about the two functions of the thyroid and the ovary being linked together, that I figured that the most common age for diagnosing hypothyroidism, women must be in that premenopausal, like 35 to 40.
Yeah,
I haven't yet been able to find any statistics to back that up.
Yeah, actually, there are some thyroid prevalence studies, Karen. There's one, the Colorado health study that was done in the early 2000s, late 90s, actually found that the highest incidence of thyroid disease in women does peak in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, right around the perimenopause, for a traditional perimenopause. And that's held true for many, many observational studies, mostly because of that linkage.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting to me is that, yeah, I don't believe that it's sort of in the common, like it's not sort of commonly known to women to look for this. So this is, I think with Karen, like just to also return to, I know my body and I know there's something wrong. How do you, so what would your, what have you learned about just following your instincts with this experience?
Myself?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm much more, I'm more of a pain to the doctor. I think I'm probably a little more aggressive about my treatment and what I will tolerate and when I'm not being treated well. I'm just more impatient too. I suffered long enough. I'm fairly intolerant of going through all that. But just going back to the hypothyroidism, when I went back to my family doctor and told them results of the endocrinology clinic and that they found I was slightly hypothyroid, he said he wouldn't have thought to test for it unless I had complained about being tired. But
yeah.
I had five children at home, so he was
well,
not.
I think that speaks to the medical community's ignorance of that fact. I think you're right, Karen. I mean, the medical community is rather ignorant in the primary care arena, and they're too often, even women who are tired, their doctors would tell them, well, you have five kids at home and your youngest is a baby. What are you complaining about? you work and you have kids. Stop whining. That's a very common refrain that I hear from patients. And I think this isn't a statistic I've ever seen written anywhere, but just from my own practice, my own experience, I think women who have thyroid disease, virtually 100% of them have some cycle irregularity of some sort. That doesn't mean premature ovarian failure. It just means that they don't, not necessarily menopause, but they have some cycle problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's virtually 100%. And I hate to, again, I'm not trying to harp on the men, but the men just don't get it because they don't have cycles, so they don't realize when our cycles are off, we really do mean it.
There really, there's really an issue there. Now, Karen, before we have to close the show, do you have anything to say to women who are struggling with this regarding maintaining a libido and a sex life? I know you talk about this in your book.
Yeah, I think again I'm pretty intolerant of discomfort, and you know I don't want to be a zombie. I had one psychiatrist tell me that I wouldn't care about my libido if I were that severely depressed. You know, if I had medication that treated the depression well, I wouldn't care about the libido anymore. And I found that quite disturbing
on many levels.
I think just keep looking because it's. I mean, it's important, and I was often told, you know, try your antidepressants for 6 weeks before you come back, and, you know, even one day might be enough to tell me it wasn't the right one. So I was not very patient about it. I mean, I had to keep up my irregular functions, and if I couldn't function, you know, that was not a compromise.
So basically, it sounds like your advice is, in terms of libido issues, is just don't accept unacceptable side effects.
Yes. Oh yeah,
and that's really that's one of the keys, not to just sort of you know accept that this is normal.
Yes, and don't necessarily wait out the 6 weeks or so that your you know doctor thinks you should give it a try for, because there's so many options and different antidepressants and different medications. Women, you know, some will work for some women and some don't, and it's sort of important to find the one that works for you. And it's pretty hard for any doctor to predict which one will work for you and which one won't.
So it's sort of constant experimenting. You know, this hour has gone by fast. We're going to have to stop, but I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Elena Christofides and author Karen Baynard. You can find Dr. Christofides online at endocrinology-associates.com, and I'm going to go there and see what she has to say about birth control pills again. And Karen Baynard's wonderful book, Menopause Before 40, is available on Amazon, and it really does validate the experience for women going through this. Next week, we'll look at cancer in the environment with a health promotion expert who lobbies for anti-smoking legislation, as well as a toxicologist. Dr. Christofides will be back again March 30th to talk about type 2 diabetes. She's becoming our resident endocrinologist. And you can visit me online at sarahhealth.com. And remember, you are not alone.
Thank you for listening to Sarah Health Radio. To contact Dr. Rosenthal or one of her guests for more information, visit sarahhealth.com. Tune in next Thursday for another hour of Sarah Health Radio with Dr. Sarah Rosenthal.